as we roll in towards the end of the month of April, believe it or not, we are heavy into the spring selling season. We are approaching summer, and it's time to once again have another team talk. It's great to have you with us, everybody. I'm Victor Howell, and this afternoon we are talking to Ron Jackson from Team Toyota. He was nominated by Tommy Goodson 1 week ago, somebody I've known a long, long time that we will reflect on here in the business. Good to see you, Ron. How are you? Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Vic. I'm doing good.
Absolutely. Doing great. No nerves, huh?
Nice. No nerves. Just a little, but I'm good.
No, things are easy, and it's fun to have a conversation as we get to know everybody. It doesn't take long to call roll before we get to you with your tenure at Team. How long has it been?
It'll be 31 years, excuse me, in 2 days.
Really? 2 days from now? Congratulations.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
How do you describe the ride?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been exciting. It's been challenging. It's been emotional. I think all those kind of combined has made for a good 31-year stretch. I've enjoyed working with Team and still enjoying it. Worked with some great people, great owners, co-workers. I like to say it's easy to come to work in the morning. I enjoy it a lot. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. You were just saying before we started our podcast here that you have friends that keep asking you when you're going to retire, but you said your answer was because I still have fun going to work.
Absolutely. I often say I'm on cruise control at this point in my career. What I do is not difficult because I love people. I guess the biggest benefit is helping someone reach their goals. It's more than just selling a car. It's helping someone select something that will benefit them in life. It's a big purchase besides buying a home. Next to that is buying a vehicle. So it's emotional sometimes. Sometimes I cross that line that salespeople shouldn't, getting emotional with customers. But when you're helping someone and you can see the genuineness in their eyes and hear their voice inflection that they really appreciate, that makes it worth it, without a doubt.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, I understand the challenging in 31 years, challenges in the business, challenges with manufacturers, but not many people would have used the word emotional.
Well, I think it is. I mean, when someone comes to see me and they don't expect to have success in buying a vehicle because of their situation, and there's, my goodness, there's just a variety of situations that people find themselves in financially. And I'm no means a financial analyst, but I think when you have a heart for people, when you can empathize with a person's needs, if you were there or not, and fairness, that has so much to do with it. So I think when you can approach every situation that way, it's just not a car deal. It's perhaps gaining a friend. It's perhaps gaining a family. My goodness, I have some 20 car families out here, people who have trusted me, their parents, their grandparents. Yes, I'm showing my age now, their children, you know, relatives and friends. And that means everything to me. I often say when I see someone in public, I can approach them before they see me because I have nothing to hide. I've done my best.
Well, full disclosure, I'm probably one of those that fits in that category because you have sold my family probably 8 cars between my in-laws.
That's correct.
Between their Avalon and the Tacomas and the Camrys, and then my sister-in-law and my niece. I mean, I'm one of those, like you said, I've been there for a while, but they just, you know, I'm like, go see Ron. He sold, you know, like my sister-in-law, he sold your parents a car.
Correct.
You know, her daughter, go see Ron.
Correct.
And it just
kind
of builds up on it. So, yeah, I guess I fit in that category.
Absolutely. And as I forestated before we started this interview, Vic, you and I are not just co-workers, we're friends. Mm-hmm. And so I pride myself in saying that if I can build a friendship with someone, the trust factor is easy. That's the easiest part. But if people don't trust you in the first 5 or 10 minutes, you don't stand a chance of getting their business. So that means everything to me.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I think that's an approach people can take a lot in business where whether it's selling cars or whether it's selling clothes or selling fill in the blank or even applying yourself, that's probably 10% of it. The other 90% is just being a good person.
Well, sure,
and
sure.
If you can be a good person and establish the relationship like you're talking about, the rest of it takes care of itself. Then that 10% of the technical side, once you get that.
Absolutely. Early in the business, I learned from someone that it's much easier. Well, first of all, no one wants to be sold. You know, people come in and their guards are up because they don't trust us being salespeople. And I think the first thing we have to do it show empathy and get them to understand that, man, I sit on both sides of the desk. I say that every day. I sell vehicles, but I buy them as well. So I can understand where you are, what you're trying to accomplish. If your money isn't right, if your credit isn't right, I'm here to help you. Let's try to achieve this goal together. And usually when it happens, it puts us on the road to success in most cases.
Sure. Yeah. would you put it into the, I mean, look, 31 years is a long time. Would you put it into the hundreds, or dare I say, closing in on four digits in terms of the long-term relationship? I know saying 1,000 might seem crazy, but in 31 years, like you said, you sold parents, now you're selling their kids and maybe their kids' kids.
Yeah.
There's
I think that's a fair assumption.
A lot of relationships.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. Over the years, I mean, I've met hundreds of people, hundreds of families, and built relationships over the years, and they've sent their relatives and friends to me. So yeah, I think that's a good estimation. Yeah. It could be thousands of people that I've encountered and, you know, built those relationships. Now, you know, I can say that maybe I don't remember all the names.
That's okay.
I am guilty
That's
of that,
okay.
You know, but I'm pretty good with faces, you know. So, I would say it's bordering the thousands of people that I've met, you know.
Since we're down the road avenue, if you will, we're going to talk personal in just a second. When you and I first met, Team Toyota was located on Florida.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You were a manager in the business. You were just starting to learn the golf game. We'll talk about that in just a moment.
Yeah,
but I remember.
Yeah,
see,
yeah.
I've known you so long. I remember you pre-golf.
That's right.
I know pre-golf Ron Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
But what was interesting to me, and if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. But the avenue. A lot of people talk about starting at a level, then you want to move up, and you want to move up, maybe get a manager. You were managers for a while, and then you were selling vehicles. But here you are, 31 years later, still. One of the longest tenured we have, and obviously very successful. What was that journey like, and being able to make that transition from being a manager to doing what you're doing now?
That's a very good question. I was promoted to management. I was promoted based on my performance at the time. I was really new to the car business. It was a job I said that would be the last thing on earth that I would want to do, and it turned out to be a career. But at the inception, I found some immediate success in selling cars, and upper management saw that, and they promoted me, and I worked the desk for, I guess, about a year. And I realized that for me at that time, at that point in my life, management was good, but I think I had my success. Well, I'm sure I did, meeting people and helping people. So I went back to the floor, and that's where I've been.
Yeah.
You know, since that transition. So hats off to those guys who are working the desk. It takes special people to do that, and I admire them greatly, and I respect them the same. But it just occurred to me that just perhaps at that time, my avenue in the car business was doing what I'm doing now, helping people reach their goals and attain their goals in life as far as their automotive transportation.
Yeah, and I appreciate that answer because I think it's such a great learning lesson story. You always think of you have to go up, and not that what you did moving from management is going down, but the trajectory would always seem, oh, I want to go from here to be in that office.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
But it's okay to leave that office and come back down and still have success. And you're the A number one example of it for 31 years and all the thousands of people that you've met. I just think it's a great story. That's why I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, and you know, that's a really good question. I don't feel any less of a professional because I'm not on the desk, or I didn't remain on the desk at that time. It was just another move, another area. I feel like God had, you know, God took me in, and I found, you know, the success I had the first year after being on that desk, and I went back to the floor. Man, it just really accelerated in pace. My business was good. I learned more about people. And it just worked for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you found your comfort zone.
It worked for me. Absolutely.
That's great. I understand you had a little bit of a football history.
I did. I'm a son of the neighborhood coach. My dad was the neighborhood coach coming up. So, my goodness, at 5 or 6 years old, I had a football in my hand. I had a baseball glove. and by the way, baseball was the sport coming up in my era. So I was a pretty good baseball player. I was the pitcher. I was the quarterback. And I wasn't just the coach's son, but I really was skillful at those positions. So yes, I was. And moving up through middle school, my goodness, I came out of middle school, Marrero Middle, with a 7.3 strikeout average per game.
Wow, per nine innings? Wow.
Yeah, now that you mentioned that. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
let's
brag
about that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was actually pretty good. Pretty good. I went to high school at St. Augustine, New Orleans, or some would say St. Augustine. Played football there for 2 years.
They say St. Augustine, but they're not from down there.
Exactly.
All you have to say is St. Augustine. We know who's St. Augustine. If you're not from there, you might go.
That's right.
Get away with St. Augustine.
Yeah,
in the know, it's St. Augustine.
Yeah, we called ourselves the high school pros, big-time high school football in New Orleans. So I played 2 years there for the great Otis Washington, who's now in Louisiana Hall of Fame.
Sure.
And, man, just what a ride that was. I played 1 year of small college football, Division III, in a little town called Indianola, Iowa, at Simpson College.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So my athletic experience was great. I learned a lot, learned how to compete, learned how to win, as well as losing, without a doubt.
Lessons that go hand in hand, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Families from New Orleans?
Yeah, my entire family is, well, except my wife. My wife's a Midwestern girl, but my family is from a little town called Marrero on the West Bank of the New Orleans area.
Sure.
That's where I grew up. And, they're still there to this day. I have a sister now who's moved to California. My mother's in California as well. But that's that's where we started out, right there in Marrero.
Okay, so I have to ask, and I don't want to presumptively connect the dots here, but your all family's from New Orleans. You said you played 1 year in Iowa.
Played 1 year in Iowa.
But you also said your wife's Midwest, from the Midwest.
Met my wife in college, yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
While in Iowa.
While in Iowa.
So it might have only been 1 year of football up there, but boy, you came away a winner.
Yeah, we said we were destined to meet, without a doubt.
That's right.
Yeah, we've been married now 47 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, she's a brave woman, let me tell you.
Congratulations, that's great. Oh, no, you came away from that experience on the top end for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I joked about it earlier. There was another advertising agency that was doing the ads, but they had hired me. I had just left Channel 9, was doing ads when Mr. Ken called me.
Mm-hmm.
And this store was, you know, the Honda was Baton Rouge Honda, and just made the move to Seguin,
mm-hmm.
and we were on Florida. So that's when I first met you, coming in doing, when I was doing commercials, and you were constantly talking about wanting to learn the game, and you'd gotten your first set of clubs, you were swinging when it wasn't busy, you were standing up kind of working on that swing, and now, and I've played with you now, your handicap is pretty damn good. Where did this passion for wanting to learn golf for a baseball and a football guy, where did that come from?
You know, I think it started with my brother-in-law and I took me out to hit some balls one day. Sports always came easy to me, Vic. I could, good hand-eye coordination. I could play anything. And he took me out, and I was strong enough to hit the ball quite a distance, but I couldn't hit it straight. You know, left, right, left, mm-hmm. right. And I think there started the passion. As I said, a golf bug bit me at that point. I wanted to learn the game. Came back after that vacation and got with a gentleman named Al LeMoyne, who was the sales manager at team at that time.
Yep.
And Al began to teach me how to strike the ball, how to hold the club, just the real basics of the game. And it just consumed me after that. My dad was a tennis coach. I played tennis through high school and most of my adult life up until golf. And golf ruined me. I haven't touched a tennis racket in 25 years.
Yeah, but now you've got your Sunday outings with your friends that you said they're the ones always asking you, when are you going to retire?
Yeah, that's right.
Play?
That's exactly right. We play every Sunday, well, most Sundays, and I try to play one time during the week when I'm off. And it's just a great game, and I feel like I've gotten better, as you well know. I mean, golf, you're ever learning. Even the pros can't master the game.
Sure.
So it's a true hobby, I like to say, you know, that I've acquired over the years. And it's a good outlet for me. It's relaxing sometimes when I'm hitting the ball good. You know, other times it's frustrating. I just want to pick up my clubs and go to my car.
Absolutely.
But I always find my way back, you know. So it's a great game. Right. I love it.
As we're recording this, they just finished the Masters, and Rory McIlroy's shank into the creek made me feel good, because I'm like, that's me all the time.
That's right.
At least the best of the best,
You
know, can do that too. And then all of a sudden you see him bend one around a tree, 210.
Unbelievable.
And put it 6 feet from the hole.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, well, I'm never going to get to that point.
Yeah, those guys always recover. They make mistakes. You know, I'm not quite at that point yet. You know, it's a weekend golfer.
Did you watch the Masters? I'm sure you did.
I did. I watched most of it. I was really pulling for Rory. I'm glad he was able to you know, when pull went out. I mean, he's been through so much. He's been challenged in so many ways because the expectations for him were so high.
Absolutely.
You know, post-Tiger. So, yeah, hopefully he continues on that track and get him a few more majors.
I did not know until 10 minutes ago when you and I were chatting, you were asking me about my family because, like you said, we've known each other for so long, and I was telling you about their school. And we all know that in Baton Rouge, they're trying to make waves in education and improve things. I did not know until just now that your son-in-law, is that correct?
That's correct.
Son-in-law is the new superintendent of schools in Baton Rouge.
That's correct. I'm proud to say he's a very passionate guy. He loves his family, loves my daughter, loves us. So there's not enough good things I can say, you know, about him. I'm not one to name drop, but he's been a blessing to our family. I like to say we have no sleepless nights when it comes to our children. I have two great son-in-laws, of course, Lamont being one, and Reggie in Houston, married to our middle daughter, Candace. Mm-hmm. These guys are, they're real men. They're real men. They love their families. They love their wives. They love their children. So I'm just always impressed when I look in that direction, knowing that I can lay my head on my pillow at night and not have to worry about
well,
that.
As a dad of four girls, I hope I can answer that four times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know that's the highest compliment you can give somebody.
Absolutely.
You know, to know that your family is safe and sound. And I hope he does well, because I know, as you and I were talking about, this isn't a knock on him, but he enters a job with quite a challenge. And it looks like, from what you're saying, he's really taking it head on, because it sounds like he's accepted the fact that he knows there needs to be improvement,
mm-hmm.
and he's not shying away from it. And I hope he does well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to stay in bounds on what I say about my son-in-law, because, I mean, he has a huge responsibility before him. But again, I'll just echo the sentiments that we just expressed, that he's up to the task.
Yep.
I feel like he's up to the job, and we expect nothing but great things, you know, from Lamont.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
No doubt. Well,
without a doubt.
We hope he does well. And you mentioned you have one over in the Houston area. How is it being a granddad? Because I know oftentimes I'll see you, or, you know, my father-in-law, I'll say, hey, Ron, Mr. Harmon, that's my father-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, he's coming by. He's coming to get an oil change, but he's coming to see you. You're going to be there. And you'll say, oh no, I'm running to Houston. We're going to see the grandkids.
That's right.
We're going
over
to see the grandkids. So how is life as grandpa going?
It's special. It really is. You know, your grandkids love you, like your children, unconditionally. And you just can't do enough for them. I mean, they just want to be around Poppy and Nono. That's our nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come to the house and they never want to leave, and we wouldn't have it any other way, you know. So it's special. Coming up, I'd hear that from my parents, you know, and, you know, your grandparents are always just special. You love going to the house and you love hanging around, going in the cookie jar, playing under the house, playing in the backyard. All that comes with, you know, going by grandparents. And it's the same way with us. My wife is the... Man, she is just the perfect grandmother, does a great job with our grandkids, and it's just special. You know, I can't think of another way to describe it.
You load up the house with sweets and treats when they're coming. Because I remember my grandmother and my dad's mom,
yeah,
when we were in New Orleans. So my parents, my mom and dad, grew up on the opposite sides of City Park.
Mm-hmm.
So when we would drive in from Dallas, and let's say we go to my mom's parents' house, it was always a battle of who's going to go sleep with Nana. That was my dad's mom.
Yeah,
but the reason why was because on the way home, you pass one of those little 7-Eleven type stores.
That's right.
So you were getting a slushie, you were getting icy, you were getting
that's
candy.
Right. That's right.
Grandma's got it all laid out. So
yeah, yeah.
When the kids are visiting, do you, and is it No-No, you said?
No-No.
No-No.
Yeah.
You No-No loaded up?
Yeah, I need to give No-No all the credit. You know, she is a wonderful person. You know, my kids and my grandkids don't want for anything. As a matter of fact, our girls come to the house instead of going to Albertsons or Oak Point. They go in the pantry and they shop, because my wife buys in multiples. I always kid her about that, but she saves us hundreds of dollars because she's a supreme shopper. She's very organized.
Nice.
And yes, when the kids come by, they know when they go in the pantry, it's going to be there for them.
It's a treat.
It's a treat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Changes in the business. There's a lot going on in the auto business, huh? I mean, the last several years, and we've talked about this with, you know, with previous guests, but what you've seen and where maybe you see things going, because you're neat. You're the first one we've talked to that really has a focus on used cars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you sell new, obviously, mm-hmm. But just kind of what your observations have been in terms of all the different influences in the business, and where do you think maybe things are going?
Mm-hmm. I thought about that question just this morning because I knew you would ask. I think the business has changed a lot with technology, the expansion of technology. Most customers who come on the lot now know as much about the vehicle as we do, mm-hmm. because of cell phones. They come on with laptops, and you know they just have the knowledge. So I think now it's more the onus is more on the salesperson to be the consummate professional, to make people drop their guards, to let them know that, hey, I'm just like you. You know, I just want to assist you in reaching your goal. So all that being said, I think the business has changed a lot, you know, with the internet now, with AI now on the scene. But I do think, Victor, I do think that people in general still want to enjoy the buying experience because it's an emotional purchase. You know, they want someone to treat them fair, to treat them nice, to understand their plight. You know, regardless of the amount of technology that's before them, people still want to be treated well. So all that being said, I do think in spite of all the technology, I think it behooves us as sales professionals to make sure we make eye contact, that we reach out to people and let them know that we understand. I don't think that element in sales in the car business, in my opinion, will ever change.
So you sort of just answered a question I would have ended on, which is with your 31 years of experience, and we are certainly not chasing you out the door. You're having a lot of fun. I know you want to
stay. And I am, yeah.
And I know everybody keeps asking when you retire.
You got me relaxed now, so I'm good.
No, that's great. That's the whole point of this. But I did want to ask you, for those who maybe don't interpret what you said earlier, I feel like it's only fair to ask you directly. You have 3 decades of experience, and hopefully some of our younger staff, whether it's at Toyota, Honda, Mazda, or at Acadiana, whoever's listening, your tips and advice for them to be as successful as you have been. And I know you're not one to pat yourself on the back, but you've lasted 3 decades. You've got hundreds of loyal customers. You talked about the business changing, but there's still the side that we're on, right? Mm-hmm. The business side.
Absolutely.
So not as the old man in the chair, but the man with experience.
Sure.
For
sure.
Advice you could give others to say, you know what, like you, I never thought the car business was going to be my business. Well, you have turned it into a career, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who might have just joined us and aren't realizing yet, this can be a career.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say?
You know, I've watched other professionals like myself who are very successful in the business and have been successful. And the common denominator that that they share along with myself is being empathetic. You know, I think empathy is a word that sometimes it's taken for granted. Maybe it's even looked over because we're in a fast-paced society. Everybody wants the answer right now. Fast food right now. If it's slow, we get upset and we leave. Well, you know, I think, you know, when someone comes to make a purchase, this is a huge purchase. I think it takes a huge degree of empathy to let these folks know, hey, listen, I understand what you're going through. I may not have been there, but I do understand. Maybe not to the depths of your situation, but I can learn and I can listen. You know, I can, as we say today, I feel you. And so I want to reach out and try to help you. Let's talk about how we can attain your goal. So I think if a sales professional like myself possess that quality or learn to acquire that quality of dealing with people skills, I think you can find some success.
Yeah.
You know, we have some young guys in our department, I mean, right now, who are very good. And I think they are learning to do that, which is a key reason for their success. You know, so that's the best way I can answer that, Vic. You know, in spite of I'm not the tech geek, so to speak. You know, I must confess, but I do think I'm good with people. You know, and I've learned that from dealing with people over the years, whether in sports, whether in ministry, family.
Mm-hmm.
You learn to listen more than you speak. And I don't know if that will ever change in life because people want to know that they're being heard and that they're being felt before they give you your business.
See, and that really rings to me in different ways too, because I'm dealing with this with my girls, taking what you're saying. But the ability to listen, but then to be able to speak, everything's so technological these days. It's text messaging, it's Snap for even the younger
Absolutely.
Kids. You know, I'm trying to tell my oldest, who's 16 and just started driving, and said, look, when it's time for a job, you're not going to go snap them.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to text them. You got to learn to look at somebody and shake a hand and look them in the eyes.
Absolutely.
And be able to introduce yourself.
Absolutely. And
my take, and I think it's a great answer. That's absolutely why I wanted to ask you, because my takeaway from it, interpreting what you're saying, is also don't pull the ripcord so fast.
Mm.
Because if you go for a couple of weeks, a month, and sales are slow, don't bail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when I, even in my chair as a media person and a marketing person, and I go around and you see people, and sometimes you see them frustrated, the selling point that I hear from you is that you may talk to a customer, let them know you're there, but by being a good person, a lot of people are going to shop. They mm-hmm. might go see somebody else, but if the experience down the street sucks, but you were
That's
good
right.
to them,
That's right.
don't panic if they leave, because you never know what they're going to find. Now, out of 10, maybe 4 or 5 of them do buy somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
but you've set that standard and that baseline that if they go down there and somebody mm-hmm. tries to attack them or isn't as pleasant or mm-hmm. as respectful,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be like, man, forget this.
Absolutely.
I'm going back to that guy.
And, you know, it gets challenging sometimes. I mean, you talk to, sometimes you might go through 10 people and no one buys a car. Folks will say, well, this is the first place I've shopped. Well, you know, I like to turn that around. Folks, I'm glad you came here first, because in my mind, I get to set the bar. So the next person you speak with may not do the things that I'm doing, may not say the things that I'm saying, may not spend the amount of time that I'm spending with you. And hopefully, now I'm not saying this to them, but I'm thinking this in my
sure,
mind.
Sure.
You know, and hopefully they will use their measuring stick and say, well, hey, Mr. Ron was patient. He listened to me. Let's go back and talk to him.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. And I hear it a lot, not only with me, but with some of my coworkers as well.
Yeah.
You know, hats off to those guys.
He's preaching. My man Ron is preaching. Preach, my man. Preach. Love it. I hope you're listening out there. That's fantastic, Ron. I told you this would be fun.
Yeah,
jeez,
yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
We're
yeah.
just chatting it up. All right, so look, you know, because when Coach was here, we did Coach a couple of weeks ago on our podcast, and he nominated you. You are open. The floor is open to you if you would like to nominate somebody. As I tell everybody, don't feel pressured to do it.
Yeah.
If you have
yeah.
somebody in mind who you think would like to come chat like we're chatting, so we can keep getting to know people in the Team Automotive Group, would you like to nominate somebody?
You know, what a tough question and such a tough choice. I mean, there's not many people, first of all, who has the time and grade like I do. We've got some 10, 15-year guys, people, I should say, but not many in the 30 range.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about it again this morning, and it's really hard to not mention Joe Jenkins. Joe is a personal friend, co-worker, just a great man. He's had some challenges in life, and I've admired him more than what he knows. And so I would like to nominate Mr. Joe Jenkins.
Fantastic.
I call him the legend.
Well, we will get the legend on.
He is slow to speak and quick to hear. So that's.
Well, for a talking podcast, the challenge is there now. If he doesn't talk a lot, Ron, you're going to put me to work here. But all right, Joe, we'll look forward to doing that since your friend Ron has nominated you. I appreciate your time. This is fun. And like I said, I appreciate and treasure our friendship. It's been 3 decades, well, 2.5 since I've known you, since I started.
Absolutely, yes.
And I knew this would be fun. I was so happy when Coach nominated you. And, man, the stuff you said, I just hope, again, people go back and listen to it again, because you've got some great wisdom that I think can carry people a long way. Whether they stay in the auto business or not, I think, what like I said,
life lessons.
Life lessons,
yeah.
Exactly.
And I just want to say one thing. By Coach nominating me, that's a really tall compliment. And I want to just thank him for doing that.
Well, I thank you for your time. This is fun. Next time you go to Houston to see the Grandkids, we should tell people. Your wife, she's kind of scratching that itch about going to Houston, so we're going to keep
I'm
you
around.
You,
she's going to listen to this, and she's going to remind me.
Well, tell us you can't leave just yet. It's only 4 hours or a quick flight down there.
That's right.
You still have some years under your belt to stay with us until you call it a career.
Absolutely.
So don't head over there too fast. Ron, thanks so much.
Thank you, Vic, for having me.
We're doing this right before the Easter break, so have a blessed Easter.
Yes, sir. Same to you and your family.
Thank you. And to everybody listening, we hope you have a happy and a blessed Easter as well. Joe Jenkins, we'll be in touch with you. We look forward to visiting with Joe as we kick things off in May. And until then, we are wrapping up here. He's Ron Jackson. I'm Victor Howell. Thanks for listening. Everybody, make it a great day, and we will talk again soon here on Team Talk.